I grew up assuming that as a woman in America, I can do pretty much anything a man does. Get an education, a job, own a house, drive a car. But Manal al-Sharif grew up in Saudi Arabia, where women have to fight for those privileges. And she did. She got a degree in computer science. She became one of the first women to work in IT at Aramco, the national oil company. And then, on her 32nd birthday, she did something that would seem so harmless here. She drove a car in public, which turned her into the leading voice of the Women to Drive movement and also put her life at risk. In a memoir called Daring to Drive, Manal tells the story of how she was imprisoned and charged with driving while female.
What I violated was not a law, it was a custom. And even if there was a law, I would challenge that law because it's unjust. The same night after I was released at 2 a.m., the secret police showed up at my doorstep. I was taken for interrogation and then I was strip searched. And they put me in jail, women jail.
And how long did you stay there?
I was there for 9 days.
When you were arrested, what was the public reaction?
The newspaper didn't do me well, really. They pictured me as evil, as Asian to the West, as someone who wants to corrupt the women, as unholy. One clerk went so far to call for my lashing in public.
Manal, I think it's important for women here to understand just how physically restricted life is for women in Saudi Arabia, how much less freedom they have just to move about, to go places, even, for instance, to leave the house.
Imagine you live in a city, big city like Los Angeles, and you don't have a car, you don't have public transportation, and you don't have taxi companies that are reliable. And at the same time, you cannot walk in the city. Now you need to go to your job or your school or just simple act of going and buying your grocery. These are our cities. So we're forced to hire men to drive our own cars and they live with us in our homes. So we have to bring non-Saudis to drive our cars. They don't speak our language. They don't even know how to drive a car. We have to teach them.
So women can own cars, but they just can't drive them?
Yes, my car is under my name. I bought my car, I paid for it, but I couldn't drive it. And I had a driver's license from New Hampshire.
This shadow transportation system you described, what I don't understand is you said this is a system of mostly foreign taxi drivers who in many cases are illiterate or don't know the rules of the road. And these are the men that women hire to drive them places. And yet, most of the time, in every other aspect of life, women are never allowed to be alone with men in Saudi Arabia, strange men, except in this one instance.
This is the contradiction. We have the gender apartheid in my country, where men and women are never allowed to mix. So growing up, men and women, we studied in different schools, different colleges. My male professors, I've never met them. I've always seen them through CCTV. The families themselves are segregated, where my cousins, my own cousins, when I reach puberty, I cannot talk to them. I cannot mix with them.
You can't talk to your male relatives?
No. If I meet them today in the street, I wouldn't even recognize my cousins. But the right to drive in my country is, we use it as a symbol of civil disobedience to protest the guardianship system. That the law does not recognize me as an adult. All my life, I'm a minor. I'm considered a minor before the law. And we use the driving as a symbol of civil disobedience.
You should explain the guardianship laws. A woman is considered a minor her entire life, so you always have to have a guardian. At first, it's your father, but then that changes through your life?
I imagine having a car with a registration paper. And when you sell the car, the registration paper move to the new owner. This is exactly Saudi women. We have the guardianship, assigned legal guardian, male guardian. And this assigned male guardian changed through our life. If I'm single, it's my father. If I don't have a father, it could be my uncle or my brother. when I get married, it moves to my husband. Let's say I don't have a husband or a brother or a father. It can be my own adult son. My own adult son give me permission and the consent to get my papers or leave the country. Or even if I'm in jail, when I was in jail, I needed my guardian to sign the release papers. So even if I finish my sentence in jail, I'm not allowed to leave jail as a Saudi woman without my assigned male guardian come to jail and sign the papers. And I know a lot of girls are still in jail because their family feel ashamed. They won't go and sign the papers of their release, even after they finish their sentence.
Well, in some ways, what you're describing is a culture in which women are always in jail in some way or another. I think you wrote in the book that, is a woman supposed to have her guardian's permission to leave the house?
Yes, the spoken permission. She has to ask the guardian his permission to leave the house.
So would you do that when you were married? Would you ask your husband if you could leave the house?
Yes, I had to.
What would happen if you left without his permission?
He would get angry.
I can see that the driving would become a symbol of being able to determine your own location, I guess. Your own
destiny. We call it drive your own destiny.
It wasn't always this way in Saudi Arabia. I mean, the country was relatively permissive until Wahhabism, this brand of much more fundamentalist interpretation of Islam, became the norm, which was back in the 70s, I think. And you're part of the whole generation of young people that were affected by that. How old were you when you were radicalized, you know, really adopted a much more fundamentalist interpretation?
I think I was 14 or 15. It was in my middle school. Uh-huh. When I was looking for identity and I wanted to please my religious teachers, who were the most popular in the school. And some of my generation were immune, but they were very few. And the most of us were prone to radicalization, which is following strict interpretation of the Islamic texts that was imposed on us in schools, in the street, in public places, everywhere.
And you actually became more fundamentalist than your family. I mean, you went home and confiscated your brother's music cassettes. And I don't know, what else did you do?
Yeah. I caused my brother to be kicked out of the house for one day for having a singer's picture in his wallet.
When you look back at that period of your life when you were a much more devout Islamic fundamentalist, are there things that you regret?
Oh my God, a lot. I think just giving hard time to my family. We couldn't even watch TV. I would just be the policing them for not listening to music because it was haram. Being angry at dad for not going to the mosque to pray Fajr prayer, which is the dawn prayer. I regret burning my own drawings that I spent years and years and years working on in my sketchbooks. I didn't really have choice. I was thinking this is the right way to do it. I feel like I lost really beautiful times of my life, but it's not about really reminiscing and regretting the past more than what you do with today, that you never go back there, you never fall in that hole again.
And what about now? Because you've paid a pretty heavy price for driving that car. You wound up leaving Saudi Arabia and you had to leave your son behind. Do you ever feel guilty about the choices that you made?
I think he will understand, my son. He's a big boy. Sometimes we don't have the choice. There are things that choose us, and they're bigger than us. I don't think I regret, because if no one speaks up, if no one is willing to pay the price for speaking up, there's no hope. When I wrote the book, I was thinking, I'm going to give hope to women in my country. I don't want to bring them down. I want to bring them up. I want to say, listen, I'm here. I made it.
That's Manal Al-Sharif. She's the author of Daring to Drive, A Saudi Woman's Awakening.